Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. A new season of The Bachelor began this week, which means Bachelor Party with Juliet Littman is back in full swing. She's back twice a week, with Monday's show covering each new episode, and Thursday's show covering Vanderpump Rules with several appearances from David Jacoby. This week, The Bachelor himself, Peter Weber, joins Juliet to talk about the season ahead. You can subscribe to Bachelor Party wherever you get your podcasts, and join the Bachelor Party Facebook group for insights, gossip, breaking news, and more.
I'm Sean Fennessy.
I'm Amanda Dobbin.
And this is The Big Picture, a conversation show about the Academy Awards. They're here! Amanda, the 92nd Oscar nominations have arrived. How are you feeling bright and early on this Monday morning?
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it. I don't love being here this early. I was saying to you before we started recording, and I just feel like a disclosure before we get into this podcast. My outlook at this hour of the morning is never the best.
We're going to be flying fast and loose. That's what happens when you record at 7:30 in the morning. We're going to do our best to not make any mistakes. Some mistakes were made by the Academy, however. We'll be talking about some of them, the snubs, the surprises, some of the nice things that happened with the nominations this morning. It'll be a robust conversation about what will be happening on February 9th at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, there are some good things.
Absolutely.
And some happy things.
Absolutely.
And some baffling things.
Where do you want to start? Should we start with the big picture's big picture?
Let's do it.
Okay.
This is a problem in the big picture. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe we'll start with the most honored movies. That seems like the safest place to start. First and foremost, Joker comes to us with 11 nominations. Now, were you surprised by that?
No.
I wasn't either. Let me tell you something about Joker. People in the Academy love that movie. Actors, they love it. Directors, we learned clearly, they love it. Craftspeople, they love it. Composers, they're in. Up and down the board. And you've only got one acting nomination for this movie for Joaquin Phoenix. So you can see how it's diversely spread across the entire voting body. Any significant takeaways from Joker being the leading vote getter, so to speak, in this race?
I didn't expect it to be the leading nomination. I think I expected that to go to 1917, which is a little bit recency bias, and also just because I expected 1917 to grab every single technical nomination, because it is a technically accomplished movie. So Joker winning the nominations thing it's not what you want. It certainly changes the narrative, maybe. I mean, it'll change what we talk about this morning. I don't know how much it changes the results on Oscar night.
It's interesting how, as you prepared to speak about Joker, you pulled your hair back into a ponytail, resignedly.
People know what I think about this.
Yes.
And I want to say right here and right now, it ain't going to change. I think that this is an intellectually bankrupt movie. I think it is the Emperor's New Clothes. I think that anyone who thinks that this movie is better than Parasite or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Little Women or Uncut Gems has bad taste and doesn't know things about movies, straight up. And we can do that for 5 weeks or we cannot. I don't really have the energy to do it for that long.
Yeah, I don't think that that's... I don't think we'll be negotiating that until the movie potentially wins Best Picture, which, you know, not always is the most nominated film the likely Best Picture winner, but sometimes it does happen. It tends to happen with noisy movies like Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Joker is kind of a noisy movie. This is a billion-dollar movie. And having this many nominations, having this kind of box office, having this kind of awareness, and having this kind of admiration from the screen actors, that's a pretty significant thing. So if we saw a Joker Best Picture win on February 9th, I wouldn't be shocked. I don't know if that's what I'm ready to predict at this point, but I wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't either. And in a lot of ways, it makes a huge amount of sense in terms of the Academy has refused to acknowledge comic book movies or superhero movies for years. The Academy has been trying to update itself to reward new types of movies, to be current, to be younger, and that at the end of the day, the Scorsese cosplay, look, it's Tiny Batman movie winning Best Picture would be an Academy-esque thing to do.
It's true, and it would be 1 year after Black Panther, which sort of ushered in, I think, a lot of these conversations. What else has been honored here? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Parasite and The Irishman, you've mentioned those. 10 nominations for each movie. I don't think a huge surprise there.
For Once Upon a Time in the Irishman, Parasite is six.
Excuse me. Once Upon a Time in the Irishman have 10, as does 1917.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about those first before we get to Parasite.
Okay.
I think that is, this is kind of standard operating procedure. What we've got here is three people who made films who have been hugely recognized in the past, Quentin Tarantino, Martin Scorsese, and Sam Mendes. As you said, the recency bias of 1917 is creeping in. I spent all weekend thinking, is 1917 the presumptive frontrunner for Best Picture? I don't know if I still feel that way right now. A couple of little chinks in the armor that we'll take a look at to identify whether or not that's still the case. Any big-time takeaways from the 10 noms for all three of those movies?
We are taking some things for granted. I know that I'm taking some things for granted. It's fantastic that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood got 10 nominations. It's fantastic that The Irishman got 10 nominations. Great movies. 1917, very impressive movie. We're going to talk more about it later this week. It is less surprising that it got 10 nominations. You know, I saw someone on Twitter describing this as a real, like, Wars and Cars years, which every year at the Academy is. But
certainly,
I thought that, you know, that 1917 is the war part of that. But a very well-made movie. That's good. We shouldn't immediately jump to all of the griping, even though I certainly have. And the reason I did that is because Joker got 11 nominations, and I just, like, really don't want to talk about it this early in the morning. But there are great films that are being recognized.
There are. Among them is also Parasite and Little Women, both of which pulled in 6 nominations.
Yes.
Which is interesting. I'm not surprised by either of those things, but it is a credible accomplishment. And I think that a lot of people, in a kind of film Twitter sense, are frustrated by some of the Joker recognition. But Parasite getting 6 Oscar nominations is insane. There is no precedent in 91 consecutive Oscar categories, or excuse me, 91 consecutive Oscars for something like this happening. So I take some solace in Parasite's success so far.
I do too. It was my favorite film of the year. Or was it? Yeah, I think I put it at number one.
It's very early.
It's very early. It's definitely up there. And I put it on my decade list. No, this is an amazing film. And Bong Joon-ho being nominated for Best Director, that's very exciting. And you're completely right that it has become such a, quote, lock, or we were so sure of it that we are not, like, kind of rejoicing, especially in the Parasite of it all. Little Women is the same way. There are kind of a couple notable omissions in the Little Women nominations that maybe put a slight damper on it, which we will talk more about. But, you know, it did get nominated for Best Picture, thank the Lord. That was the one where I was just going to not show up this morning.
Yeah. So there's something interesting about the Parasite nominations to me. One is that the film was recognized in both Best Editing and Best Production Design, which are, you know, crafts categories. And on the one hand, that's kind of impressive and shows a broad sense of support amongst the Academy. No acting nominations for the movie, though. No Song Kang-ho. None of the other actors in the film were recognized. There's maybe a case to be made that this is a kind of acknowledgement of a film mastery, but maybe not the same kind of Hollywoodized star mastery that a movie like The Irishman or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood receives. I'm not sure where I fall on that. I think that this does feel like progress to me to some extent. The Little Women thing, you make a fair point, which is that on the one hand, it's obviously a brilliantly made movie with wonderful performances. It's great that it's nominated for Best Picture as well. The absence of Greta Gerwig's in the Best Director category is something we'll talk about a little bit more here and kind of what that means. It's kind of dangerous to draw mega conclusions from the Academy Awards. There's only 8,000 people in this group, and a lot of them are old and weird. So you can't, we don't, this is, even though this is the sort of the definitive document of movie history in terms of achievement, it is one of the wonkiest award recognizing bodies in the world. Academy President David Rubin noted that what makes this special is that this is the people who make movies voting on what is the best movies. And that's part of what makes the Oscars great. It's part of what makes them kind of terrible. It's because there's an insularity to some of this. The Parasite recognition is something that makes me think, maybe this isn't such an insular body anymore. Maybe there are a lot of international voters. Maybe this is changing. Maybe the way that we look at international movies is changing in our American culture.
I think that's certainly true. And I do think that the Academy trying to change itself and how we talk about the movies has evolved enough that we were starting in a place where we expected Parasite to be nominated. We expected Little Women to be nominated. We were talking about, like, whether Uncut Gems would make it in. And the fact that we're all kind of bummed out about the fact that Uncut Gems got snubbed, maybe you're not supposed to use the word snub in that context, but let's use it.
No, I use it. I always use it.
Okay, it got snubbed.
Uncut Gems was snubbed.
And that I think that that in does indicate some progress, some change, some a different lineup than we would have had 5 years ago and a different approach to the movies. On the flip side, we can only address the world that we live in. And I do feel, because we've been having these conversations for a while and because it was such an exciting year, in a year that has Parasite, The Irishman, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Uncut Gems, Little Women, The Farewell, what am I forgetting?
I mean, all kinds of movies.
Sure, but you know, all
Avengers
these...
Avengers Endgame.
Okay, sure.
Which... Shazam.
Great. There you
Detective
go.
Detective Pikachu.
Well, that was a snap. This does... I can't help but feel that this is a disappointing configuration of that list of movies. It's not totally disappointing, but there is just something of... We got our hopes up enough that you're kind of like, oh yeah, this is still the Academy. And there's still going to be... lots of nominations for the more traditional types of movies.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's a donut with a little bit of sour milk in the frosting. You know, like, it's still a donut, it's still sweet, still tastes good, still exciting to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, all these great films recognized. There's just something a little sour about it. And we'll talk more about that as we get into the snubs of the day. So Little Women, along with six nominations, also six nominations, Marriage Story, which is a little lower than I would have guessed 3 months ago.
We've just stopped talking about Marriage Story, one of the best movies of the year.
What happened?
I don't know.
Noah Baumbach just blown off the radar for Best Director, even though I think his directing is wonderful in the film. We talked about categories like Best Editing on our predictions podcast, potentially for this movie, not recognized there. It did get recognized in the obvious places. Adam Driver, Scarlett Johansson, Best Picture, Best Screenplay. I still think it has a chance to win Best Screenplay. But I don't know. You see results like this, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's running weak. Laura Dern's still likely to win in the Best Supporting Actress category, but not a terribly strong showing for Marriage Story, which is, I guess, is a slight disappointment since we both really love that movie.
Yes. Again, it does seem like a lot of the movies that have very athletic, aggressive filmmaking techniques, very showy cinematography and editing and just kind of like capital D directing and capital F filmmaking, cleaned up.
It's very true.
And Marriage Story is a chamber piece in a lot of ways.
I do like, for the sake of Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig's relationship, that neither of them were nominated for Best Director. Both of them were nominated for Best Picture, and both of them were nominated for Screenplay in different categories. Mm-hmm. That's what you want when you're in an equitable marriage.
Great. I was very nervous about how this would shake out for the two of them before we went on this journey. And I'm rooting for both of them. Love those movies. Two of my favorite movies of the year. I'm happy for them. I'm happy for Harold. You know, I'm bummed for Marriage Story more generally, just because it seems like we're just going to, Laura Dern will win and that's it.
Let's go to surprises, because I feel like what we just talked about, I wouldn't say was a fait accompli, but I wasn't stunned to see, say, Joker get 11 nominations. I wasn't stunned to see Parasite even get six nominations. So, you know, it was cool to watch. First surprise, three nominations for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, which is not a good movie. Now, granted, these are all below the line. John Williams, who we talked about on our last podcast, earned his 52nd nomination, which is absolutely ludicrous.
No, it's not. It's great.
It's impressive. It's not ludicrous insofar as that it's crazy that the Academy did that. It's just crazy that one man has received that many nominations.
Respect John Williams, okay?
Okay, I respect him greatly. The Two Popes came through, after all. Did not get nominated for Best Picture, but it did get nominated for four awards, which is pretty surprising, including both of the co-leads, really, even though Anthony Hopkins was our supporting actor and Jonathan Pryce was our lead actor. A little bit of category fraud there. Any Two Popes thoughts? We still have not talked about the Two Popes in any detail in this podcast. I don't know. It's weird that the Two Popes turned out to be the wife.
No, I literally said that in September.
It's crazy. Poor Jonathan Pryce.
Well,
been treating him like dirt for years now on this podcast. I was just very happy about Antonio Banderas. That was probably my happiest nomination. Every year there's one thing that happens where I'm like, ah, that's good. That person deserves that. I think Antonio Banderas deserves that. And Pain and Glory is a wonderful movie. It made me want to watch it again, seeing him get recognized here. I just have good feelings about it.
Just also thrilled for 5 weeks of Antonio Banderas out and about in the world. And I'm very pleased, with all respect to Taron Egerton, who ran a great campaign.
Yeah.
He really did.
Yeah, truly the Michael Dukakis of this awards campaign.
But I think that he had done all the campaigning he had in him. I'm not really sure what the next 5 weeks would have held. So I, you know, apologies to Taron Egerton. I'm thrilled to be wrong about that one. And I'm thrilled to have Antonio Banderas in my life.
Taron Egerton will have to calm himself with vast sums of money and good looks. I think he'll be okay in the long run. Rian Johnson is an Oscar nominee.
Great stuff.
Great stuff. Shout out to two-time Big Picture alumni, Rian Johnson. Knives Out, not as much love as maybe we thought it might get. It did not get recognized for Best Picture, which you predicted on this podcast. Or I think that was your wild card, was it not? That it would not be recognized?
I predicted it, that it would be nominated, and my wild card would that it would not be nominated.
Correct. Well done by you.
Thank you.
Greta Gerwig now has three Oscar nominations. She does not have two Best Director nominations, but she does have three Oscar nominations at a very young age, which is very impressive and very uncommon for a woman. Again, I do not want to overlook what seems like progress. Is it enough progress? No, it's never enough progress in the world. But this is a good thing. She will get over the mountain. I'm quite sure of it. The Academy loves her.
You think she's going to win?
I don't know. I don't have a good feel for the adapted screenplay category, though I did correctly predict the five nominees.
So did I.
I don't. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How many did you get right, by the way?
65.
Oh, did we match?
Tied. Yeah,
oh,
which is very cute.
Speaking of equitable worlds between men and women on podcasts, let me just say, Ad Astra is an Oscar nominee for sound editing. This is exactly why I do not predict sound editing on this podcast, because I don't know where this came from. I think the sound in Ad Astra is wonderful. I don't know if that's like the number one thing about it that occurred to me as I watched it. But hey, James Gray, Ad Astra, well done. Florence Pugh.
Yes.
I believe my note here says fuck yes.
Yeah.
Nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Little Women. She, of course, is she my number one right now? Is she my favorite?
Only you can decide that.
Yeah, let me think on that. We'll come back to it. I'm pretty excited about this one. This is good. Obviously, you talked at length about what's so great about her performance on her Little Women podcast.
Tremendous stuff. I also just have to say, in terms of, there's a lot of Little Women promo content in my Instagram feed right now in my Explore tab. You watch one video and then suddenly it's just every single junket that they've done together. And they're all very good, but Florence Pugh really shining in those junkets. She can just turn a very awkward question into a three-minute soliloquy about snails, and you're just like, what's happening?
She's got great verve.
But also, I will keep watching this.
Huge fan of hers.
Yeah.
Honeyland, two nominations.
There we go.
Honeyland has more nominations than Ad Astra.
Yeah.
Honeyland has more two more nominations than The Farewell.
Yes.
Pretty weird. It's nominated in both International Feature and Best Documentary. Honeyland is a good movie.
Sure, yeah.
I have no problem with it. It's from North Macedonia. This has never happened before. This is the first time that a movie has been nominated in both International Feature and Best Documentary. What that portends for its chances in either category, I don't know. I suspect it's going to get blown off the board by Parasite in Best International Feature, but maybe this indicates a lot of support and a lot of more people will see it in Best Documentary. We'll have to wait and see. I'm Standing With You was nominated for Best Original Song. This was from the film Breakthrough. Have you seen Breakthrough?
I have not.
I have not either. I forgot about this, but this song is written by Diane Warren.
I know. I did too. And I was like, this is very stupid. Soon as I saw Diane Warren, I was like, oh, of course Diane Warren got nominated. What was I thinking?
This is Diane Warren's 11th Oscar nomination, and this is the fifth in the past 6 years. So we made a grave error. That being said, if you and I had both realized that Diane Warren was going to be nominated in this category, I'm not sure that the song I would have eliminated would have been Spirit by Beyoncé, but we will get to that in a moment. Scarlett Johansson has joined the two-time Oscar nominee in the same year club, which you predicted.
I did predict this.
And, you know, I'm not really mad about it. I know that Scarlett Johansson is a figure of some ill repute amongst the literati in the world. But I think her performances in both of these movies is quite good. And it's interesting to see the names that she joins here in this group. There's only been 10 people in the history of the Oscars who have been nominated twice in two different categories in the same year. Faye Bainter in 1938, Teresa Wright in 1942, Barry Fitzgerald in 1944, then Jessica Lange all the way in 1982, Al Pacino in 1992, Emma Thompson and Holly Hunter in 1993, same year. Julianne Moore in 2002, Jamie Foxx in 2004, and Cate Blanchett in 2007. Almost all of these people, I think 7 of the 10, won an Oscar in one of the two categories. Do you think Scarlett Johansson will win an Oscar?
I don't.
Sad.
Well, a bit. You never know, I guess. But I kind of, we'll talk more about Best Actress, but if there is an upset there, I don't foresee it being Scarlett Johansson.
Ooh, intriguing. I look forward to your takes. Should we talk snubs?
Yep, it's time.
I'll tell you what, I did not see Jennifer Lopez not getting a nomination. And I don't know if I was foolish or the Academy is foolish or both. Someone noted on Twitter this morning that the Academy does not like pop culture, which I thought was an interesting way of describing a handful of the quote-unquote snubs this morning. What do you think about J-Lo not being there for Hustlers?
This is just a real you blew it situation. Do whatever you want, but they have for 91 years and counting, or 92, I suppose. I think that this is just not fun. It just displays a real lack of imagination. And is probably, when you put all the snubs together, there is a certain strain of taste that is not represented at the in the Academy. And at pop culture is one way of putting it. Fun is another way of putting it. Stories involving women is a third way of putting it. But unfortunately, Jennifer Lopez hits all three of those. I just kind of find it baffling. This is one of the only snubs where they kind of had to go out of their way in order to not include her. And a lot of these nominations to me feel like the result of it was a very compressed Oscar season. There wasn't that much time. People just kind of scrambling and checking boxes and relying a bit on kind of traditional Oscar narratives and taste. But it's so easy to check the Jennifer Lopez box because she's been nominated for literally everything else. So people had to really want to say no to Jennifer Lopez. And they can live in that world, and I'm living in mine.
Yeah, I would say it appears that it's Kathy Bates really who took her spot, the presumed spot that she was going to have. Kathy Bates, obviously a great actress. I think she gives a great performance in Richard Jewell. She already has an Oscar. I guess the support for her was deeper than pretty much anybody I could see. I guess a handful of pundits had this pick, but almost no one didn't have had Jennifer Lopez on the outside looking in. Yeah. I think that there's just a lack of respect for her. That's really all that it is. They see her as a celebrity and not as an actress. And this confirms that to me in many ways. Not that Hustlers is, you know, the seventh seal. It's not the most important film that's ever been made or anything like that. But it's an entertaining movie that did great business. A lot of people saw it and a lot of people loved it. There is a hive, certainly, of Hustlers admiration. And I'm sure that there is some kind of ingrained bias happening here about stories about women, about a woman of color, about a celebrity who is a sort of multi-hyphenate, you know, who is a singer and is an Instagram influencer and is married to or is soon to be married to a professional athlete. And all of these things, I think, somehow may have coalesced to work against her in some way. It's unfortunate.
Do you think anyone in the Academy knows who Fiona Apple is? Like, do you think that even the fact
anyone,
that,
any living human?
I mean, I'm asking the questions.
I do.
Okay.
I can find one or two.
I am wondering whether just her entrance even hits with the Academy in the same way that it hits for us, just because it's different reference points.
Yeah, I think if we did this vote again in 5 years, it would taste a little different. Yeah. You know, it's also a recent period piece, and recent period pieces are not going to play as well to 60-somethings in the Academy.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, so here's a whole bundle of snubs for us to break down. So obviously Hustlers has not been recognized here, but other films that were not recognized at all that have been running all throughout the season. Dolomite Is My Name, nothing. Not even Ruth Carter for Best Costume Design. The Farewell, Bupkis, Rocket Man, Crash Down, Uncut Gems, completely shut out. I can't say that I'm stunned by this, but it feels very, very purposeful. It feels very designed.
Does this feel purposeful, or does this feel like kind of unconscious biases and taste made more apparent by a rushed awards season and by, you know, the option of, if you have The Irishman and you have 1917, that kind of more, it's a Scorsese mobster flick and a epic war film.
I think there's usually only one spot for movies like this, maybe two, and I just think Parasite ate the conversation. I think Parasite ate the conversation in almost every category here. I think it overwhelmed movies like The Farewell. It overwhelmed movies like Uncut Gems. It even overwhelmed movies like Dolomite Is My Name, which had significantly more star power and the mega Netflix machine behind it, and it couldn't conjure any love. You know, notable here is just one nomination for A24. throughout this whole thing. And the one nomination that it got was for Yaron Blaschke for The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Which is...
I picked that.
You did pick that, which is just insane that happened. Why?
Because cinematography, you know, people like showy black and white. It's real, like more is more.
You're right.
That's what it is. And that is a theme through a lot of these nominations.
It is, but that is a small movie. And for Ford versus Ferrari to not be recognized in that category and for A24's one nomination to be in
one of the strangest
movies of the year, a movie that I love and probably have not given enough attention to from a personal perspective.
Okay.
But we did name a segment essentially after the movie on this podcast. Tricky stuff. Other snubs. No Beyonce. No Spirit. Spirit's not good. Who cares?
They don't really seem to care about The Lion King and or pop stars, so fine.
I think Beyonce will be just fine.
I do too.
I think she'll actually be back at the Oscars, would be my guess.
I think she will win an Oscar.
Potentially with a better song.
Yeah.
Frozen 2.
Okay.
To Frozen 2, I say deuces, because as you may have heard on this podcast, that movie makes no sense. We don't just have to recognize an animated movie because it's popular. In fact, it's better if we don't. Am I excited that Claws from Netflix was nominated in its place? I don't really care. Claws was fine. It wasn't that bad. I Lost My Body. That's a great movie. Toy Story 4. That's a great movie.
The only thing here is that I had seen literally one of the animated films, and now I've seen none of them.
Sad.
And quite frankly, I don't know if that's going to change.
You got to step it up and watch Toy Story 4. I know that you don't want to watch animated movies, but Toy Story 4 is legitimately one of the best movies of the year.
Like, when am I going to do that? When am I going to sit down and be like, today's the day that I'm going to watch Toy Story 4?
This podcast is not called Amanda's Planner. This podcast is called The Big Picture.
You know, like, tell me the situation when I, a grown woman with a job and responsibilities and, you know, other commitments and personal interests and goals, I'm going to be like, what I have to do today is watch Toy Story 4.
Do you know what the Academy says to your personal interests and your goals?
I do,
it
Sean.
Says, fuck your personal interests and your goals.
I'm extremely aware every year and in every category.
Okay, so we're completely content with Frozen 2 being absent. Atlantics is absent from Best International Feature. A slight surprise here.
I thought this was a big surprise.
Yeah, well, it's questionable. I mean, Senegal does not have a huge history. I think the Netflix provenance of Atlantics made people think that it was kind of a lock moving into that race, instead it was replaced by Corpus Christi, which is a film that I've still not seen, which I'm going to watch immediately because I need to know what it's about to understand that category a little bit better, even though there's an expectation that Parasite will sweep through. Apollo 11 being ousted from Best Documentary is genuinely shocking to me.
Me too.
I what happened here?
I guess they just went for capital I important movies.
I guess so. We did talk about the kind of, you know, what a movie has to be to get into this category. And I will say The Edge of Democracy, which we did not talk about, which comes from Brazil, it is a wonderful movie. Our colleague Noah Mullally is over the moon for that movie. He's recommended it to me 100 times. I've seen it, but he was just like, I can't believe how great that film is. But no One Child Nation here.
Yeah, that is one of my most, I know I didn't pick it, but that's my most disappointing. And again, I'm sorry to say it, but in terms, we picked like a lot of, quote, serious movies, but the one that is featuring things that women go through, and, you know, and the power of One Child Nation is that it talks about how that policy affects everyone and not just women, but it's pretty harrowing. And that doesn't fit in the serious movie conversation in the way that some others do. Just pointing it out.
It doesn't. American Factory has been my pick for this all along. It remains my pick for this category. We'll have to wait and see. One thing that is a little bit tricky to discuss here is, will there be an emergent Oscars So White campaign in the aftermath of these nominations? Now, Cynthia Erivo was recognized for Harriet here. But most of the nominations are lily white. Suppose Antonio Banderas for Spain is not an English-speaking nomination.
Yes.
But we don't have Awkwafina here. We don't have Lupita Nyong'o here. We don't have Song Kang-ho here. We don't have Eddie Murphy here.
We have Dolomite and Farewell completely shut out.
Do you think that there will be a noisiness around this conversation?
Yes. Both because there is a noisiness around a lot of things, but also because this is an issue. I think we were having this conversation before it happened because we were all so nervous about the fact that there would possibly not be any nominees of color. And we've talked a lot about the best actress conversation. And you and I both did this where we had four white women who we expect to be nominated. And then one category that I think we each picked different women of color who were not nominated.
It's kind of a turnstile among three women.
And that's a bummer. And also to the extent that prognosticators and podcasters like play a role in that, then we played a role in that as well. But I would also point out that Cynthia Erivo was nominated for playing a former slave, which is another Oscar narrative, which is that people of color are often only, or films about people of color are often only nominated for portraying, number one, slavery, but also situations in which they are disenfranchised and in a situation of power or empowerment. So even there, the nomination is kind of playing into some sticky stuff. So I think we will continue to keep talking about it. I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. And it's smart the way that you've positioned it, because if you look at, well, personally, my choice between watching The Farewell or Us or Harriet again, I'm not watching Harriet. I'll never watch Harriet again. I just don't think it's a very strong movie at all. Awkwafina and Lupita Nyong'o are giving two very different kinds of performances, neither of which are steeped in that kind of historical nature that you're describing around Harriet. One is very empathetic and kind of quiet, especially given the sort of persona we know that Awkwafina has publicly. The other is sort of more outsized than the kind of performance you usually get from Lupita Nyong'o. One is heavy genre. One is sort of indie coming of age story. Two categories that, you know, the Oscars historically does not really mesh with. You don't see a lot of coming of age stories getting love here. You certainly don't see a lot of genre stories getting love, especially in the Best Actress category. So it's not shocking that Cynthia Erivo is here. I chose Awkwafina because, one, I had hoped the Golden Globes speech would have boosted her a little bit. And two, in my heart of hearts, I think I knew Cynthia Erivo was probably the front runner given all the things you described, but I just didn't want to see it. We let this happen every year. We think it's going to go in this direction, and then it doesn't. The same is true for this other snub, which is there are no women in the Best Directing category this year. I think the only legitimate candidate in terms of having a chance to be nominated was Greta Gerwig. We've already talked about her nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay. You know, perhaps anticipating the storm to come, the press notes shared by the Oscars took pains to note that a record 62 women were nominated, representing almost one-third of this year's nominees. One-third is not half.
No.
It is one-third.
It's also one-third once. Like, actually, spare me.
Yeah, so that's not ideal. The chains of progress are going to take a long period of time to become equitable and maybe even overwhelm the equity. But things are not even in that respect. Did you catch Issa Rae saying congratulations to those men when she announced the Best Directing category?
I did. And it was appreciated. That has become a running thing now. Remember when it was Natalie Portman. Who, at the Golden Globes, the all-male nominees. I mean,
and Greta Gerwig.
Yeah. Yes. Right. How are we going to do it?
Yeah. You know, I don't know what to say. I'm not surprised. I think that women represented a significant bump at the box office in 2019. At the end of 2018, I wrote about how absolutely bizarre it is that there were fewer female directors in charge of significant feature films than there were 20 years ago. That changed this year. Little Women is a hit. That's exciting to watch. I don't think that the Academy is there yet.
No.
That's my sense of things.
No.
I think it's only five women in the history of the Academy Awards that have been nominated for Best Director. Five women?
Yeah, I think it's more surprising to you than it is to me. I don't think either of us even picked Greta Gerwig as a wild card. And I think it's a bummer. I kind of get tired of talking about it. And I think that my larger disappointment about these nominations is not actually from the Greta Gerwig snub in directing, though that's a bummer. But it is in the trends of the rest of the slate, and that you can just kind of tell that the movies about women or made by women were just not taken as seriously. And that's me interpreting a list of things, and that's me putting a spin on it, and you may interpret it differently, and that's fine. But maybe that is also some coincidence, you know, that it's just kind of 1917 gets made and is such an achievement, and then Joker is whatever Joker is. And so there are more movies that appeal to that more traditional type of vote. And so things like The Farewell don't edge in. We always knew that The Farewell was going to be a long shot. The picks that I made for The Farewell were from the same, like, I hope this will happen, which shame on me. But
shame on me, too. I had two nominations predicted for The Farewell. And like, again, I knew in my heart of hearts, I knew in July when the movie came out, I was like, you know what? The Academy does not like movies like this. I don't know why, but they don't.
Yeah. But you look at things as a whole, and to me, it's less surprising that there aren't that there's no female director nomination, because I know what types of movies that this voting body takes seriously.
Shall we go to Hark?
Sure.
I have a Hark.
Great.
Hark! Hark! Triton! Hark!
The Oscars needs a play-in game. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Like the wild card game?
Yeah. Well, not exactly.
Then tell me.
In March Madness, in the NCAA tournament, they have instituted two playoff games. So sort of play-in games. So games between two contenders who are lower seeds that have to play an additional game to get into the big tournament. I think Best Picture would be greatly improved, and there would be a significant amount of enthusiasm for the award show if they gave the public a play-in game. Pick five movies not nominated by the Academy. Let the people vote. So there can be one nomination added. Now, that doesn't mean that people get to vote on Best Picture. It means they get to choose one nomination. You can choose nine every year. The 10th spot goes to the people. Now, how do we do this? The answer is I don't know. There's no way to do this without fraudulent activity and bots taking over the process. But there can be a way. I trust the Academy and their $800 million museum and their coffers full of billions of dollars.
You trust the museum that still is not finished. Before we get into what a terrible idea this is on like five different levels, you're trusting the Academy who can't build a museum.
The only reason I'm doing this is not to memorialize a film into Oscar history. I'm just trying to put more energy around the Oscars because the Oscars needs energy. So if you take five movies and you let them be the maybe it should be the five that did not get the sort of the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th vote getters go to a public vote.
This is honestly a worse idea than popular Oscar.
Oh my God. What? I come here with creativity and you throw it in my face.
Why are you opening it to the people? Why is democracy a part of this all of a sudden? No. Do you know why this is a terrible idea?
Tell me.
In addition to, you know, the fraud and that the Academy will spend all of its money trying to fight bots, and then that's a whole thing. And just technologically speaking, I don't think the Academy is really there. But perhaps you have seen various audience polls that we do on The Ringer, at the website The Ringer. And we put things to a vote. What was your favorite movie trailer? What was your favorite movie? What was the best TV show of the decade?
All of the results are great. Everybody who listens to and reads The Ringer is wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you to everybody who's consumed the content that we work hard to make here.
Okay.
Whatever Amanda is about to say is null and void.
I have suggested. I think everyone else can draw their own conclusions. I am, as it is well known within the Ringer offices, when it comes to declaring the best of things and making lists, I am anti-democracy. I am all about a small group of intelligent people setting standards for everybody else. And, you know, just because the Academy sets the wrong standards every damn year doesn't mean that I'm just willing to open it up to everybody. That's chaos.
Okay, counterproposal.
Okay.
Nine Best Picture nominees, and then the Academy calls me and they say, Sean, what else should we nominate?
I
say, Thanos.
I am inevitable.
I really hate giving you any sort of power or telling you that you're ever right, but I would honestly prefer you picking the 10th nominee to giving it to the public.
If you had a 10th nomination this year, what would you choose?
Yeah, let's put Uncut Gems in. Why not?
Let's put Uncut Gems in. That's what I say. This has been Hark. Let's go to the big race.
Well, mama, look at me now. I'm a star.
The big race is all of the races. So let's do some more takeaways. Based on these nominations, do you think the Academy needs to make any significant changes to the way that they conduct their voting, the way that they organize their body? Do they need an overhaul in any way based on what you've seen here?
Yeah,
today?
I got my own Hark. Okay. Age limits. Let's go.
Oh, wow.
65 and out.
Wow.
Bye.
65 and out, that means Martin Scorsese wouldn't be able to vote. What in the world?
I don't know. You're asking me to bring some content. I'm bringing some content.
This is some ageist nonsense.
Yeah, it is some ageist nonsense.
Wait till you're 65.
You
we're going to run this clip
ageist
back.
Nonsense? These entire nominations. Go away. Okay, boomer. Bye. I'm out.
This is your helpful feedback for the Academy.
Yeah. I mean, also that way, maybe we wouldn't have to wake up at 5 a.m. If this isn't like old people hours, then I don't know what is.
When we did our Golden Globes nominations reaction show, obviously the hark was related to the time at which these nominations are announced. I still have not heard a good reason why this is not a primetime special. I cannot for the life of me understand why this is not a primetime special. There's free money on the table. Why do I have to watch the nominations on Twitter? That's insane.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, it's outdated, right? Again, this is the Academy not updating itself, being run by old people who still wake up early and then watch morning shows, you know? And the cycle has changed, guys.
Do you think these nominations are good for the telecast? Do you think there's going to be a huge interest in the Oscars this year? We touched on this a little bit last week.
No, because I think that obviously a huge number of people went to see Joker and paid a lot of money for it. And maybe they have a vested interest in Joker like taking over the Academy, and maybe that means a lot to them. That comic book movies and that this, you know, towering artistic achievement or whatever the hell you guys think, actually be recognized by this group of people. But for me, it doesn't really seem like the people who are really, really into Joker as a culture dominating force kind of care about these more traditional benchmarks or also can be satisfied by anything. So I don't know. I can't imagine. Do they watch a lot of live TV? Are they going to sit through 3 hours of an awards show for their thing to win?
Well, I mean, the only thing that drives more interest than pleasure is displeasure. You know, why do people listen to Mike and the Mad Dog every day? It's because they want to disagree. They want to be angry. So I could see a world in which fans of the movie Joker tune into the Oscars to see if Joker wins because they're interested in the film and they're interested in the conversation around it. And then when it doesn't win, it's one more machine apparatus to get angry and frustrated. I mean, that's essentially what the movie is about. The movie is about a kind of discontent, a kind of isolation, and a not getting what you want feeling. So that would be a nice bow tied upon the Joker campaign. I really don't know. I still think the ratings will be down this year. I don't know how down. You know, there are some big movies here, but not very many big movies. Last year, Bohemian Rhapsody, A Star is Born, Black Panther, that's as big as Oscar movies get. That's in that Titanic realm of more than a few $200, $300, $500 million earning films. Joker's really the only mega hit here. And
that we know of.
Well, you mean related to like something like The Irishman?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Though I would assume that not more than half of the people who started The Irishman did not finish it. There's no way to know that, but I don't know if the interest, the sort of cultural interest in that movie is as high as it was in something like Black Panther.
I think that's probably true.
Or Bohemian Rhapsody, for that matter. So we'll see. The other thing that's a big problem with the Academy right now, and I don't really know what to do about this, is there's such a presumptive, foregone nature to all of the acting categories now. And it's because there's so many award shows and there's so much conversation and dialogue. We got a surprise last year with Olivia Colman. That was exciting. But for the most part, doesn't it just sort of feel like the races are locked up?
It absolutely does. I watched the Critics' Choice Awards last night.
Please review that.
I have to say it wasn't the most professional award show that I've ever seen. A couple notable things. They showed so many of the categories just during commercial break, and then they just kind of put like a title card on the screen for both screenplay, original and adapted screenplay, cinematography, editing,
not ideal,
song. It was like Greta Gerwig and Quentin Tarantino won for adapted screenplay and original screenplay, respectively. Didn't see that at all. You know what? They have an award for the best young performer, and which is very cute. And Julia Butters was nominated, and both of the kids from Jojo Rabbit were nominated. I can only remember Archie Yates' name because he's my favorite, but also
Roman Griffin Davis.
Roman Griffin Davis, who's the star of Jojo Rabbit. Anyway, I was thrilled that Archie Yates was nominated. But Roman Griffin Davis won, and they don't show that. They don't show a small child accepting an award on a TV show. What's that about?
Sad.
Yeah.
Wait, Roman Griffin Davis beat Julia Butters?
Yes.
That's shameful.
But can I tell
that
you—
That is shameful.
Well, but can I tell
Shame
you
Shame on these critics.
Okay. So, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood won for one Best Picture. And Quentin Tarantino was there, and Julia Butters was there because she was nominated, but Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio were not there. And so when they went to accept for Best Picture, Quentin Tarantino made Julia Butters speak, and she held the trophy. And she was just like, Quentin made me come up here and say thank you. So thank you. Hi. And then it was very cute. So she did get her moment because Quentin Tarantino understands what people want from an awards show. But the Critics' Choice Awards do not. Anyway, we brought this up because it was talk in the acting categories. Joaquin Phoenix won. Renee Zellweger won. Laura Dern won. And Brad Pitt won. Brad Pitt did not even show up. And he still won. And it is feeling like those are going to be the four at the Oscars. And that is pretty boring, I have to be honest, even though Brad Pitt is my number one guy forever.
I look forward to his speech. I can't say I really look forward to the acting races, and that's 4/8 of the interest I have in the Oscars writ large. It's really unfortunate. I don't know what they can do about that. I don't know how they can change that. I mean, obviously it hurts when you have a few sort of foregone conclusions, like Laura Dern and Brad Pitt have never won before. Joaquin Phoenix has never won before. Those are three people who have been recognized a lot over the years, who are thought to be the best actors of their generation or the best movie stars, depending on how you feel about them. And so it's kind of obvious, given the machine that they work for, the fact that they are, you know, both Laura Dern has got a Netflix campaign behind her. Brad Pitt's got a Sony campaign behind him. Joaquin Phoenix has got a Warner Brothers and a billion-dollar movie machine behind him. So,
and he is running. My man was on 60 Minutes. My man got detained with Jane Fonda protesting climate change. I'm out here for Joaquin Phoenix. I really don't care about the movie, but that's my guy.
How much romantic fan fiction have you written about Joaquin Phoenix this year so far?
None.
We're 13 days into 2020. Do you have troves of... wow, you just got all flustered.
He's out here doing the important things. He's talking about the threats to our planet and wearing the same Stella McCartney suit throughout award season. And I'm here for it. I don't mind that he's going to win. Also, I just have to say the amount of Brad Pitt content that I've consumed, because Brad Pitt, who said he was not running... is running.
Running very hard.
And is doing so much charming stuff that is the shining light of award season for me. I'm thrilled for those two guys and thrilled for them to keep campaigning. I also really love Laura Dern. And I'm excited that she's going to win an Oscar. And I love Marriage Story. And I wish her speeches were slightly less Hollywood-y. But what can you do?
She's a scion of Hollywood.
She is.
What can you do? She is who she is.
I like the Baby Yoda bit, so that's good. She's got something to go with her. It's the Renee Zellweger one. With Renee Zellweger, it's a wonderful actress. Seems like a very charming person. Bridget Jones' Diary, hugely important to me. Anyone who says that she is miscast, I'm not interested in that. It worked for me in Bridget Jones' Diary. That was almost 20 years ago. And now she's winning for a movie that literally no one has thought about since the 10 of us saw it in September. Like 10 people saw it. That's an exaggeration.
I'm on the record about this. I remain confounded by the Renee Zellweger thing. Confounded. That we agreed that it was Renee's award to lose. And that means that Saoirse Ronan, for example, is not aggressively competing in the category. I just do not get it at all. I need someone to explain it to me. I think about this stuff all the time. I can't figure it out.
I didn't understand it, but it made sense to me in sort of a path of least resistance sort of way of people just being like—
Is Saoirse Ronan so difficult to vote for? What
no,
are we talking about here?
I'm voting for Saoirse Ronan in all walks of life, okay? But not just in Best Actress. But in the sense that it's been a very fast award season, people haven't seen everything, they're just checking boxes. And this happens, especially in the acting categories, is that things get decided very early on, and people just check yes. But these nominations today, people went out of their way to not do things that have been being done, like Jennifer Lopez. So if you're not going to check the Jennifer Lopez box, then you don't need to check the Renee Zellweger box.
I completely agree. We got to find some solutions for this because it is actually hurting the Oscars, in my opinion, to make this so presumptive. What happens next here? We've got 4 weeks before the telecast.
It's only 4 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's February 9th.
Wow.
So okay. 4 weeks before the telecast.
Okay.
And voting doesn't start for another 2+ weeks. Maybe we'll have some of the nominees on this podcast to talk about their impressive work or not impressive work. I don't know. I doubt I'll try to book anybody who did not impressive work this year. The campaign is so tight. It's so truncated this season. I wonder if that means there will be some weirdness. I hope there will be, for the sake of our conversations, at least.
Do you mean weirdness in the next 4 weeks?
Well, I think more likely what it means is the weirdness will result in a lot of the, you know, easy to predict stuff that you were just underlining about the voting categories. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of obvious stuff will ultimately end up winning. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. I think in the future you will never see another February 9th Oscars date again. I think the dates may have already been set, actually, now that I say that, but I suspect they'll all be in the 20s in February.
I think that is the case for 2021.
But if that makes for a less interesting ceremony, that's bad. Do you have any reckless predictions you want to make?
Hmm.
1 month out?
Probably. And this is wishful, and I know that we spend a lot of time being like, you shouldn't make wishful predictions, but I could see an actress shakeup. I guess it would be ScarJo. In that context?
For Best Actress.
Well, but no, because she's going to cancel herself out. That's what I think. And then I guess it will be Judy. I can't predict Saoirse because that would be too great. And I don't believe in that. And I just don't think that people are taking Little Women seriously enough.
I think we got to look out for Todd Phillips.
Okay. Really?
I think we do.
I think it's going to be Bong.
So at the Critics' Choice Awards, mm-hmm. there was a tie for
yes.
Best Director.
Yes.
Which is a joke to me. What does that even mean? There was a tie.
Yeah.
Let's have a runoff then. Vote again.
Okay. I mean,
Survivor rules.
I have a few notes for the Critics' Choice Awards. That's just one of them. Okay.
So the tie was between Bong Joon-ho and Sam Mendes. I don't know. Todd Phillips coming in over Taika, who got a DGA nomination, but did not. Like, once again, the DGAs mm-hmm. did not match the Oscar nominations. This happens all the time. I don't understand it. I'm confused as to how this continues to happen, but it continues to happen. There's a lot of support for Joker. That's something we're going to have to keep our eyes on.
Yeah. Do you think it could be a split of Sam Mendes for 1917 for director and Joker for best picture?
It's possible.
Do you think it could go that other way?
At the risk of being rude, that's a total hellscape end result. In the year in which Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Parasite and The Irishman are nominated. That is not what I want as a human. And I like 1917 and I like Joker. I actually think those are, relative to Academy history, and I know you don't like Joker, but relative to Academy history, those movies are not bad compared to a lot of bullshit. Like, compared to Green Book, compared to Driving Miss Daisy, like, there has been some really horrifying shit that has won Best Picture. Even still, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Irishman, even Marriage Story to some extent, even Little Women, those movies are really good.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's going to happen, because it's always, there are lots of good movies that are nominated, and the broad appeal, stupid movie always wins.
How exciting. If you're interested to hear more about 1917, please stay tuned to The Big Picture on Wednesday. Amanda, Chris Ryan, and I will be talking about that film, what makes it so interesting, why it's such a big part of the Oscar conversation, and we'll also be talking about the life's work of one great man named Roger Deakins.
The king.
And then later in the week, Amanda and I will be back and we'll be talking about our most anticipated movies of this year.
Positivity.
We're bringing positivity into 2020. Thanks for listening to The Big Picture. We'll see you soon.